Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. Today's guest speaker will be Anne-Marie Kudlatz, Executive Director of Omaha's Refugee Empowerment Center. She'll speak on the topic, the refugee process, legal status, agency programs, and local community impact. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, March 17, 2016, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the program is Jim Van Arsdal, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
The topic today is the refugee process, which has been in the news quite a bit lately. And for my World Civ students, it's also been around for thousands of years in terms of refugees and immigration and the whole process that's involved. The program today is going to be presented by the Refugee Empowerment Center. Your speaker is Anne-Marie Kudlatz, who has been Executive Director in the Refugee Empowerment Center for 9 years. The Refugee Empowerment Center's mission is to resettle and empower refugees to become self-sufficient through direct services and education programs. Program participants establish a new life in Omaha, founded on the idea of dignity, of economic support, and inclusion in the community. The things that all Americans enjoy. The agency is a catalyst in sponsoring refugees and welcoming them to the community and creating a cross-cultural understanding between Omaha and refugee communities. The purpose of the organization is to assist refugees to learn to work and live in a new culture, and to provide them with better lives. The Refugee Empowerment Center thoroughly understands that newly arriving refugees require a great deal of assistance to adjust to a new situation in lots and lots of areas. Therefore, the center relies heavily on the community for support. Anne-Marie will speak for about 30 minutes, and then she'll take your questions. There's paper and pencil on your table. Please write down your questions and give them to members of the Education Committee who are in the room, and they'll bring them up to me. And then we'll ask them from the podium. Right now, please welcome Anne-Marie.
Thanks for coming today to learn about refugees in Omaha. I'm going to begin by talking about the history of our agency, and then I'm going to talk about the refugee resettlement process. As Jim mentioned, there's been a lot in the media lately about how it actually works, so I'll give you some of the facts, and then talk about our support programs and services. So why Omaha? You know, Omaha's long been an immigrant community. My grandparents came from Poland and Germany here. Like the majority of the immigrants that came to Omaha, found low cost of living, entry-level employment, and then a welcoming community support. So just like refugees, the same concept that applies to immigrants. They go to a community where they find welcoming, where they can make ends meet, and then as that happens, more and more refugees from those same populations join them. So for our agency, back in the 1990s, Sudanese began to move to Omaha from other cities and states. They were originally resettled in Minnesota, North Dakota, South Dakota, and came to Omaha, discovered those same values, low cost of living, entry-level employment, met a lot of community friends that helped them learn English. So they incorporated in 1997 as the Southern Sudan Community Association to help other refugees moving here at the time. And then they began talks about the community as a whole so that Omaha might potentially become a direct refugee resettlement site. So they formed the Omaha Refugee Task Force, met with, did a community assessment, met with the Omaha Public Schools, the mayor's office, congressmen, the United Way, the Salvation Army, and American Red Cross. They had some women's programs, some Sudanese women's programs. So they kind of determined whether Omaha would be a viable direct refugee resettlement city. And so in fiscal year 2000, we signed a subcontract through our national office, who then signed the contract directly with the Department of State to resettle refugees directly to Omaha. So then that allowed federal funding to follow each refugee that was resettling in Omaha to help assist in their transition. So as our agency has grown over the years, we began resettling refugees first from Sudan, the Lost Boys, people from Somalia, people from Burma, Bhutan, Afghanistan, Iraq, various countries in Africa, Burundi, Congolese. And so as we've grown, we just went through another strategic planning process in 2015, and we determined that our name, Southern Sudan Community Association, no longer was very ideal of the services that we provide. So we renamed and rebranded as Refugee Empowerment Center. So then that's our new mission, to resettle and empower refugees to become self-sufficient through direct services and educational programs. So a little bit about refugees. The word refugee applies to a legal definition as they enter the country. I know in the media you've been seeing those mass amounts of people fleeing all over Europe. They're called refugees, because they're fleeing persecution in harm's way. However, the legal definition of refugee as it applies to refugee resettlement is a little bit different. You have to actually meet the legal definition and be adjudicated overseas in order to enter the country with refugee status. So the legal definition is, according to the Immigration and Nationality Act, is any person who has fled his or her country and who is unable to return because of legitimate fear of persecution due to race, religion, nationality, or membership in a particular social group. So if you flee your home overseas and you're outside of your home country, you could be a refugee, or other people can come make their way to the United States and follow and have that same definition, but they apply for asylum. And I know I just met another person this week from South Sudan. There's been several members of parliament that were Sudanese. And when the wars broke out 2013, again in 2014, the South Sudan is still not safe. And so those members of parliament had to flee their country. And so a lot of them are coming to Omaha, since Omaha has one of the largest Sudanese populations. So once they're here, then they apply for asylum. So instead of waiting overseas and applying for refugee status overseas, you could also make your way to a safe country and apply for asylum. Both have to meet the legal definition of refugee. So all over the world, there are more than 60 million displaced people and refugees. There are, several horrible events in various countries that are consistently happening. The average refugee spends 17 years in a refugee camp. I know all of our caseworkers are former refugees themselves that have been through the refugee process. And our caseworkers from Bhutan have been in refugee camps for 18 years. Our caseworkers from Burma were in refugee camps between 20 and 22 years. So they grew up in refugee camps, got married, started a family, and then had the chance to move to a new country to basically start their lives. So overseas, as people flee countries and try and find safety and security, the United Nations and a lot of overseas agencies will help set up security, safety, tents, so they can have some type of housing, give them food, water, basic necessities, trying to meet some of those basic needs. Basically, a refugee that's been displaced, the best opportunity for them is that their homeland is safe again and they can return to their homeland, so that's called repatriation. That's the best solution. Another option is naturalization, so that country that they've been living in, they would be absorbed into that country and can naturalize there so they can begin to work and start their new lives there. And then the third option, which is unfortunately just less than 1% of the refugees are actually able to meet this, the requirements, is refugee resettlement. So our, in the United States, the refugee resettlement program is ran by the Department of State, Bureau of Population, Refugees, and Migration. There's a presidential determination each year that is signed by Congress, and it establishes how many refugees the United States will allow into the country. And a lot of times it's based on priorities overseas. This current fiscal year, it's 85,000. Last year, it was 70,000. And then it breaks it down to the countries of origin. So how many refugees will we accept from which countries? You know, this year, I was glad to see that Africa increased the number of refugees that will be able to leave the country and resettle in the United States to 25,000. Past few years, it's only been 10 to 15,000. A lot of it kind of depends on conditions in refugee camps overseas and the governments overseas and how it all plays out. And there's a lot of politics involved. I know for a while the government of Kenya, so there's a lot of Sudanese refugee camps in Uganda, Kenya, and Somalis as well. And so the government of Kenya was requiring those refugees in the refugee camps to re-register and pay an exit visa fee before they could then be processed out of the country. So it took a long time for like our government and all of the agencies working with their governments to get that process up and running again. We have seen an increase of people coming out of Ethiopia refugee camps and Egypt. So that's good to know that some of those processes have started again. I mean, it's kind of bad enough that people have lived in dire conditions in refugee camps, but then when you throw governments and politics in the mix, you know that they're not able to actually get out when they've been approved to be resettled. It kind of makes it a lot harder on them. So there are several ways that people can get to the United States, like I said, asylum. But what I'm going to talk about today is refugee resettlement. So basically what happens is overseas, a person or a family applies to be resettled, and they have to state their claim, mom, dad, how many kids, what country of origin, why they feel they've been persecuted against. They go through health assessments, Department of Homeland Security checks, the United States Immigration, USCIS, United States Immigration Citizenship Services, actually will verify all this information, and their cases will be adjudicated, so then they receive refugee status overseas. After their health assessments and medical checks and cultural orientation and everything is complete, then they're basically travel ready. So what happens is they will wait. Once their process has been approved, they will wait in the pipeline. They stated their claim saying that I'm a refugee from, example, Burma, and I am applying to go to Omaha, Nebraska. Refugees can apply to go to 32 different countries, so they can apply to go to, you know, Omaha, Nebraska, Europe, Canada, Australia, Germany, New York. And the majority of the refugees that come to Omaha come here and apply to come here because they have family and friends here. So it's mainly family reunification cases. So once they've applied and been approved, they wait in line as the United States only allows so many people in per year. And so there's this pipeline of travel-ready people. And then all across the United States, the national offices go and pick from these this pool of travel-ready people, and they'll pick some cases to come to Omaha, and they'll notify the affiliate agencies in Omaha, and the affiliate agencies will check with the Inca relatives and determine, yes, we know this person. This is my brother and his family. We've been waiting for them. And then that case is the refugee resettlement agencies will assure the case and send that notice back to the Department of State and then wait. It could be 3 weeks or 2 months, and then we would receive a flight sheet stating the date and time of arrival at port of entry into the country. So that happens all over the United States for the people that applied to the different cities. There's over 350 resettlement agencies across the United States who are then tied to the national offices, who are then tied to the Department of State. So in Omaha, we resettle refugees in Omaha, as does Lutheran Family Services. And Lutheran Family Services is the largest resettlement agency. They also resettle in Lincoln. And Catholic Social Services resettles in Lincoln as well. So the agency that handles the travel, booking the blocks of tickets, is the International Organization of Migration. And so they arrange all of the flights in connection with the Department of State. And the the loan, the travel, the airline tickets is actually a travel loan that the refugees have to begin to repay after they arrive. So as far as the Federal Department of State program goes, each refugee can receive a one-time payment of $1,125, and the agency receives a one-time payment of $900. So these are one-time per capita amounts. So for a single individual, you know, by the time you pay deposit, first month's rent, buy a new bed, pillow, toothbrush, toothpaste, toilet paper, hopefully get all the other household items donated, they could pretty much be out of money. But, you know, a family of four or more, that can stretch a little bit longer. And then our agency provides all of the core services, so that $900 per agency per person doesn't go very far either, as I'll tell you about the core services here in just a minute. So those are one-time per capita amounts. Doesn't matter if it's a newborn baby or elder person. And the Refugee Resettlement Agency doesn't actually receive that money till like a month and a half after the refugees arrive. So it's based on the number of refugees that arrive from the 1st to the 15th of the month. We report that to our national office. The national office collects that information on all of their affiliates across the United States, submits that report to the Department of State, requests funding. Department of State sends the funding to the national office, and then the national office sends the funding to the agencies. So it's kind of a tricky cash flow situation, as we're required to provide core services for people that are here, but you don't actually have their money for a while. So in Nebraska, we estimate there's around 30,000 refugees. It is hard to actually exactly tell. The census doesn't drill down to country of origin. You know, like, for instance, Africans, Sudanese, or Somalis may be listed as African-American on the census. We did an assessment back in 2011, 2012, and determined that about 5.5% of Omaha's population was refugees. And then at that time, it was also determined about 11% was immigrants, Hispanic, Latino. So that's quite a large, diverse population in Omaha. So no matter which resettlement agency a refugee family comes to across the United States, we're all required to provide the same core services. It's federally required. There are certain timelines to follow. And you have to provide case file documentation and a lot of other fun federal requirements. So the first requirement is, before the people arrive, you have to find their household, set up their household, locate a home, and set up their household, which is kind of tricky because you're asking a landlord to rent to a person who's not here yet, doesn't have a Social Security number, doesn't have a job, doesn't have any money, and is going to arrive in debt because they have to repay a travel loan. So we try and work with as many landlords as we can who understands this process to find housing for the refugees. And then our agency will pay the rent and deposit and utilities and everything on behalf of the refugees until they arrive and are able to start to pay their own bills. So core requirements are one item per person, so one toothbrush, one pillow, one blanket, one cup, one fork. So we're always looking for household donations, lightly used furniture, things that we can use to set up the household. And then our caseworkers will go to the store and provide, purchase the food, culturally appropriate food, and fill up the refrigerator so that when the refugees arrive, they have food to last them the next few days. And then the next core service is to meet the people at the airport, which sometimes is really exciting. People haven't seen their relatives for a long time. Sometimes there's a very large family reunification at the airport. It's a very interesting experience if anybody's ever interested in going to the airport for an airport greeting. The flights are usually at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, however, so the airport is empty except for all these refugees and happy people. It's very interesting. So we're required to greet the people at the airport in a culturally appropriate manner with an interpreter. And then what happens is the clients get brought to their new homes, and they go over a home safety orientation, and we're required to provide a culturally appropriate warm meal. And then usually we let them rest overnight and visit with their relatives. And, yeah, because if you think about it, no matter where you're coming from overseas, you're 12 hours upside down, plus you've probably been traveling for could be 2 weeks, you know, from various refugee resettlement camps to the airports and things like that when you're in process. So then the next day, we bring them into the office and go over what's going to be happening with them over the next several months. What is our agency responsibilities? What is the refugee responsibility? And then what services we'll provide. So first is medical assessments. All refugees are required to have a health assessment. So the first two assessments take place usually right away that first week and the next week. And then the third health assessment will be done a few weeks later when their blood work comes back. And CHI Allegiant Creighton Florence Clinic currently has the state contract to provide those health assessments. And then our caseworkers take them and help them apply for Social Security cards, state cash assistance, food stamps, Medicaid. And then after they receive their Social Security card in the mail, they are ready to go get a state ID, and then they have those two pieces of ID, and they could start applying for jobs. So the federal resettlement program is it says it's a one-month process and could extend up to 90 days. So I would say all of our cases, by the end of 90 days is when all the core services are complete, and then we have to close out their case file, review everything, make sure all the core services were complete, and then basically close the case. So the federal program is just basically for safety and security. It does not include, you know, English or employment or anything like that. So then what happens is we refer all of our clients to our English and employment classes to help them become self-sufficient. So the federal resettlement program would like to see self-sufficiency within 90 days, but it doesn't provide any funding or support programs for it. So there's other Office of Refugee Resettlement funding and some other local funding that we try to utilize for employment programs and English and all of those wraparound self-sufficiency support services. So even though in 90 days is supposed to be basically just set up for safety and security, I think it was like 24% of the refugees we resettled last year did achieve self-sufficiency within 90 days. So people are getting jobs pretty quick. So the word refugee is a status, a legal status. And once they get here, they are, you know, our community members, our friends, our coworkers. So that refugee status is a path to citizenship. So after they've been here for 1 year, they apply to adjust their status to legal permanent resident, you know, the green card. After 4 months, they have to begin to repay their travel loan. They're eligible for all the same rights and privileges as us, except for they can't vote. But after they've been here for 5 years, then they can apply for citizenship, and if they pass the test, then they can naturalize and become U.S. citizens, and then hopefully register to vote. So a lot of our programs they just kind of evolve and grow over the years. The last 3 or 4 years, there's been a lot more interest in community gardening, so we've worked with some different community members to try and get more refugee community gardens, which is really... It's really good for the refugees. A lot of them come from agricultural backgrounds, and so it helps them, you know, feel connection with their roots, and they're making friends with different people from different communities, and it helps with that integration, as well as it's good for the soul. So on site, we have many different programs and services. We have 4 different levels of English class, and we have like a pre-literate class, so that's for those people that may not have ever... maybe illiterate in their native language, maybe never held a pen or pencil. So upon arrival, when they're signing their paperwork, they're just signing it with an X. And then after, you know, by 90 days when they're signing their forms and their case file, you can see that they can, you know, begin to print their name and print their addresses and things like that. So the 4 levels of classes, the highest level we have, if you complete that class, then you're ready to go to like Metro at their entry-level GED classes. So we have on-site English classes, employment readiness training, cultural orientation, household budgeting, money management, job club, made for trade, continued cultural orientation, a driving class. We have our Root Down Community Garden Initiative. We have a New Americans Bike Program, which is something that was started a few years ago. We also have a transportation training program, so our caseworkers will teach refugees how to ride the bus. We have citizenship tutoring and fair housing education. A lot of those cultural orientation wraparound programs we provide to the refugees. So cultural orientation is is ongoing. If you imagine picking your family up and moving to a different country that you don't really speak the language or know, you know, your whereabouts, and your kids have to go to school, and you have to get a job and pay your rent. You know, it takes a long time to learn and get your feet planted on the ground and realize what it all is going to entail to establish your new life. The last few years, we found that it was most helpful to incorporate additional hours for refugees to come to our office. So when refugees apply for state cash assistance and food stamps, Medicare, or anybody, if I was to, you're required to have so many hours of community service or employment readiness work experience. So our on-site classes, our English classes, and our employment readiness training and all of that count for those hours. So we're a subcontractor to help hold the to keep track of the timesheets to make sure that our clients are meeting those hours. So while they're waiting to get a job, they're learning English and they're learning different trade skills. So our Made for Trade and Job Club initiatives have been really kind of expanded lately to include Joslyn Art Museum, and they're doing fiber art now, and the Karen are sewing clothing, which was in Omaha Fashion Week. And so it's been very interesting to see all the new projects that have been growing out of that. And we're always trying to engage our community and work on our collaborations. We had a Boyd Street Neighborhood Alliance group going on, or still goes on. They meet once a month, and they work on different initiatives that and issues that they're having in their neighborhood. There's a lot of refugees that live in this one particular apartment complex, and they were having maintenance issues. So we coordinated the landlord to come once a month and meet with them all. And then we came up with a picture sheet that they can fill out for their maintenance requests. So if their sink is clogged, they just circle sink, and they can write their address on it, and they submit those maintenance requests. And then also there's a very large community garden there that they've been working on. Last year, Justice for Our Neighbors did an art presentation, and it was like a living art, and they were looking for people that have been newer community members that have kind of become a new staple in the neighborhoods. And so this is a picture of one of them, Mary George. She's our administrative assistant and interpreter from Sudan. She speaks Arabic. She's been in the United States for over 15 years. And her story was very interesting. When she first moved into her neighborhood, the people across the street, all her neighbors were pretty nice and welcoming, except for this one lady. The husband and the kids were all nice, but the one lady was not very nice, you know, and would sometimes tell her she didn't belong there and this and that. And she lives in Benson. And so years later now, this portrait of Mary George is now painted on the wall. Waddy White and some volunteers painted it on the wall in Benson, like right by the Benson Library. So Mary George thinks it's very interesting that that lady thought she didn't belong there, and now look whose face is up on the wall in Benson. And that lady has since, and her husband have since split up, and that lady doesn't live there anymore. But so Mary George thinks that's pretty great. She's like, look, lady. We are always trying to be actively involved in different collaborative events like International Women's Day, which just happened 2 weeks ago. You know, there's a lot of different opportunities like this one where we can educate community members about refugees and our programs and services. So we've been participants in MAHA the last few years. We try and have fun sometimes with our caseworkers, because the day-to-day casework of helping people start their new lives in Omaha is very exhausting. And so we try and make sure our employees are able to have fun sometimes too. So as far as community impact goes, our employment programs have some really amazing statistical outcomes, as well as all of our other programs too. So during the last fiscal year, which ends September 30th, we had over 2,200 refugee clients that came through our office for various programs and assistance, 187 participants in our English language class, 121 people in our Rules of the Road driving class, 115 people went through our two-week cultural orientation and employment readiness training, and we had 32 participants in our job club and Made for Trade program. A lot of the clients, not only that we resettle, come to our programs, but there are also refugees that were resettled in other cities and states and then moved to Omaha, known as secondary migration. So a lot of those will come to our program, to our programs as well. It's always heartwarming to see. Many years ago, I would say 4 or 5 years ago now maybe, we began working with the Embassy Suites out in La Vista. They were interested in hiring. They needed more people for housekeeping in the laundry department. And so there was a few Bhutanese ladies we were able to get employed, and one was spoke very good English and was multilingual. And so she had eventually then moved up to an inspectress and then has a housekeeping crew under her. So it's always exciting to see refugees progress. And so as far as our employment program goes, we enrolled 105 people in employment services. So our employment caseworkers will sit down with them. Well, first they have to go through the 2-week cultural orientation and employment readiness training. And then they're referred to sit down with the caseworker. And they'll do a barriers assessment, go over their household budget again with them, determine how much money they need to make, who all in the household is going to be working, and things like that to determine what they need to do to become self-sufficient. So out of those 105 people enrolled in the program, 84 were employed during the fiscal year on average of 57 days after program enrollment, and their average hourly wage was $9.52 an hour, which is not a lot of money, but it is a living wage, and it does meet self-sufficiency for newcomer families. You know, they don't have a lot of they have to repay their travel loan and pay their rent and utilities, but they don't have a lot of excess debt like a lot of Americans do. And so our employers say that, you know, they're really, really interested in hiring refugees because they've seen increased production, decreased turnover. They know that, you know, their company's bottom line does a lot better when they have dedicated employees working for them. And as far as community impact dollar-wise goes, out of those 84 people that we helped to get jobs last year from date of hire through the end of the fiscal year, minus 20% or so taxes, 20% or so taxes, they brought home $590,000. So for less than 100 people, that is a lot of money. And when you look at, you know, they're paying rent, utilities, they're buying groceries, household items, buying cars, paying insurance, things like that, there is really a lot of businesses locally that it affects. So, it does take a village. We have a lot of collaborative partnerships that we work with. We have are still very active in the Omaha Refugee Task Force that was founded over 15 years ago. So the Omaha Refugee Task Force meets every other month, and it's a means to share information about refugee social services. And then there are committees that meet usually on the opposite months. Some of them even meet monthly. And so to talk about, you know, education, housing, employment, and things like that. So we are always looking for other partnerships to work with. We have some of the college students will come to our office once or twice a week and tutor in our English classes. We are always looking for first friends, those people that can be mentors to newly arrived refugees. It can be anything from, you know, gathering all the items and doing a household setup to meet them at the airport or go meet with them once a week or once every other week. We are always looking for more English tutors and citizenship tutors. There are some single women and some refugees that don't necessarily get out to go to the different English classes that are available in the city. So we're looking for more people to go in the homes and do small English tutoring. We do have an emergency housing fund that we're always looking to fill. You know, some refugees, they maybe just have gotten employed and their 90 days is up and they have enough money to pay their rent, but we want them to get off to a good start. So we want to be able to pay their April rent because we know they're not going to get a paycheck yet. We want to pay their April rent so that they have a paycheck or two under their belt before they have to start paying their own bills. Lately, since we just went through a strategic planning session, our agency we're doing some organizational capacity and some changing in our organizational structure. And so we're looking for new board members. And we have some nomination forms if you're interested in that or know anybody that may be interested. Let me know and I can email you that information. As well as any household items, you know, we could always use stuff for the kitchens. You know, anything you can think about lightly used that you would need to set up a new household, except for beds. We don't usually accept beds unless they're very, very new, just because there was the bed bug issue years ago. Bicycles, vacuum cleaners, things like that that aren't a core required service, but it's very, very helpful for integration where I was looking for too. So, yeah, that's about it in a very quick nutshell. And also, if you would like us to come to any place that you can think about to let other people know about refugees, we would be happy to. Or if you want to set up a tour of our office to meet some people, let us know. We have lots of questions.
Yeah. If anyone else has questions, pass them to one of the members of the education committee and bring them up to me. I already have quite a few. And let's just start with the questions. And the first one is what I would expect. So much has been made of the fear that refugees might be harboring terrorists. Please talk about the vetting process and whether this is a realistic problem.
Very good question. Yeah, so out of the thousands, the literally thousands of refugees that have been resettled in the United States over the past many years, there was only four so-called terrorists. The vetting process is extremely extensive overseas. It goes through, you know, they have to do fingerprints, background checks, have their pictures taken. They're tied with databases of different agencies overseas. They go through Department of Homeland Security. They go through U.S. United States Citizenship and Immigration Services. So, I mean, like, technically speaking, if you were a terrorist and wanted to enter the country, you could get a visitor's visa passport and go that way. You wouldn't want to enter the refugee resettlement process just because you'd be fingerprinted and photographed and, you know, and background checked so much. It's such an extensive process.
Okay. You say can't apply for citizenship. I thought they must apply. What's the correct?
Oh, yeah. Refugees are highly required to adjust their status at 1 year and then at 5 years apply for citizenship, because if they don't, then they're really stateless people and technically could get, if you know they may have had a crime or anything, they could get deported. So, yeah, we do highly recommend. They're not technically required, but if they don't, then they're like in a limbo. They're stateless.
What happens if they can't pass the test?
If they can't pass the test, they can retake it. Sometimes I know a lot of people will be able to pass the test but may not have enough English to be able to write that sentence. That one sentence is sometimes a challenge for them. So we have some tutors that can help them learn how to write that sentence, and then they can retake it. Parts of the test you can retake if you don't meet all the requirements for free, but then after that you'd have to reapply and pay the fee again.
What happens after 4 months if they don't have a job?
The travel loan is kind of like student loans used to be, I should say. It's interest-free, and so if you don't have a job and can't start to repay your loan, then you can apply for like a deferral, and they'll defer it for 6 months.
Okay. After 90 days, how often do you follow up with each family?
So as far as the federal resettlement program, at 90 days, we close their case, so our caseworkers don't technically follow up with them. But the majority of the refugees are still coming to our agency for English classes and meeting with our employment caseworkers and our employment department. So our employment department follows up with them 90 days post-employment.
Okay. The refugees sleeping in Europe from the Middle East, how many is the U.S. taking?
Good question. So those refugees that you saw on TV fleeing Europe, they were trying to find safety and security. Those are not the refugees that would be resettled right away. The refugees from Syria that would be resettled right away had been in refugee camps since 2011, 2012, and started their process back then. So those are the people that would come first. And yes, the president decided that he wanted to increase the numbers so that we would accept some of those Syrian refugees. However, no Syrians have applied to come to Omaha yet, or Nebraska yet, that we know of. Have you guys seen any yet? Yeah.
Okay, a lot of refugees have been relocated to Omaha, and the climate may be completely opposite from their homeland. What makes Omaha attractive? I thought of leaving myself due to the harsh winter.
Yeah, there's quite a few refugees that, you know, they've seen snow for the first time, and yeah, especially when they come from some of those warm places. It's got to be the community support. There's larger populations of, you know, Sudanese. There's a large Karen population, or people from Burma. The people from Bhutan, there's quite a few people from Bhutan that have, you know, their whole families here now. So it's the family and the community support.
All right. Let's see if I worded this one right. I think it says, I didn't get a green card until after a year. Can you get a job without a green card?
Yeah, so technically, refugee status technically never expires. However, they're highly recommended to get a green card to adjust their status. And they really should adjust their status. Otherwise, there's some, like, they can't get a driver's license, and there's some, you know, benefits and things that they can't get. So once they arrive, though, and they apply for a Social Security card, and we take them to get a state ID, those two pieces of ID, a Social Security card and a state ID, they can use to apply for a job.
Okay. How many refugees are in Omaha, and where do they come from?
That is a really good question. I would like to do a drill-down census to figure that out. A few years ago, we estimated about 5.5%, so we would say about 6%. The largest population is from Sudan, and then I would say Burma, people from Burma, Bhutan, some Iraq and Afghanistan, although Lincoln has a higher population of people from Iraq and Afghanistan. Who am I missing? Congolese. Burundi, Somalia. A few people from Liberia, Bosnian, yes. Well, and then the populations of people that came before this, our agency, you know, people from the Vietnamese, the Hmong, actually, people like that who are now integrated, third generation.
What percentage of refugees are in Omaha as compared to the rest of the state?
I think Omaha has the largest refugee resettlement program, and then Lincoln. And those are like the two main cities. Some refugees do apply to go to, what's it called? My mind. Not Sioux Falls. Thank you. South Sioux City, yeah. So we have to resettle them in Omaha and provide core services in South Sioux City. Some people do come to Omaha or Lincoln and then move to Lexington and, you know, some of the smaller communities that have meatpacking plants because that's where their family members work. There's also a lot of what we call Cuban-Haitian immigrants that they don't come through the resettlement program. They go and utilize through our state refugee coordinator, and they go to some of the rural places in Nebraska as well.
How is it determined that refugees are fleeing persecution and not just economic problems?
So that is a determination by United States Citizenship and Immigration Services. You know, they have to meet certain requirements. They know that certain minorities are persecuted against. There's sometimes what they call like a group waiver. They know that the Christians, for example, were persecuted against in certain countries, or the Muslims in certain countries were persecuted against. So it's basically a USCIS determination.
Okay. Describe the success that you've had with refugees actually assimilating into the community.
So, there's lots of them. I guess the latest one that I can think about is, many years ago, there was a family that came from Burma, and they went to Metro for a while, and they decided that they didn't want to work. They wanted to open a grocery store, and so they did. So we helped them off and on with oh, you have to have the steam fitter in this inspection and this city inspection. And it was quite the process. But, yeah, they've become very successful in opening that grocery store. And then they just opened in an auto repair shop on Ames Street. So, yeah, there's, you know, refugee businesses. There's community gardens. There's – I could talk for a long time. There's a lot of good examples.
Okay.
And if you check out our Facebook page, too, you can see Refugee Empowerment Facebook page. You can see a lot of very interesting stories.
Okay. Do any refugees settle in rural areas?
Some do, usually due to family and friends living there and the meatpacking plants, because that's where they are these days.
How does the government settle refugees here as opposed to other locations? Several presidential candidates have stated that refugees really just want to return to their homeland. In your experience, is this true?
Yes, some refugees, I mean, I could only imagine, your heart is always at home. Our founder and former executive director left us to go back to work in South Sudan before the separation from North and South Sudan. So, yeah, a lot of them are torn. Their heart is always at home. And they may want to go home someday. Several of them will come here and, you know, and get a good education and then try and go home back home and work with the governments of their home countries. Other refugees, for example, the people from Bhutan, they don't have a home. They aren't welcome in Nepal or Bhutan. And so all of those over 100,000 people have to be resettled somewhere else. They don't have an option. And after they're all resettled, the refugee camps, as they're resettled out, will close down, and they may only be left with one or two refugee camps. So the people from Bhutan, they don't like to be referred to as refugees because this is their new home, and they're becoming citizens, and they're community members here, and this is their future. So it kind of depends on where people come from and things like that.
Okay, I have one last question. How did you get involved in this process?
I think we're out of time. It's a very long story. I started working with Tor, our founder, in the accounting department, and it kind of just evolved from there. I helped him with his, you know, grant reporting and infrastructure. I have an accounting and business management degree. And then it grew to overseeing some of the staff in the programs. And then our program coordinator, who oversaw all of refugee resettlement, left. And so he made me assistant executive director, so, and became full-time, so I could oversee that part too. So I kind of learned the agency piece by piece. And then he left us, and he told me on a Wednesday he was going overseas, and he'd be back. He told me on a Wednesday he was going to leave on Friday, and he'd be back in a couple weeks, which turned into a couple months, which turned into he came back and pretty much said his heart was at home, and he wanted to go back home, and he wanted the agency to continue here. So he left, like literally left, like his office and everything. Everything was still in his office. So, you know, we worked with our board and our staff and did some strategic planning. That was back in 2010. Did a strategic plan 2010 to 2015 to get us where we needed to be. And then just had another strategic plan in 2015 to get us from where we were to where we need to go.
Thank you for talking to us today. Okay.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. Today's guest speaker has been Anne-Marie Kudlatz, Executive Director of Omaha's Refugee Empowerment Center. She spoke on the topic, the refugee process, legal status, agency programs, and local community impact. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, March 17, 2016, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be Thursday, April 21st at 12 noon. At that time, we'll hear a debate between the two candidates for the Republican nomination for Nebraska's 2nd Congressional District, currently held by Democrat Brad Ashford, retired Air Force Brigadier General and currently Assistant Professor at Bellevue University, Don Bacon, and Omaha attorney, former member of the Douglas County Board of Commissioners, and former member of the Nebraska State Legislature, Chip Maxwell. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of over 600 previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.